Hartenborough Walk by historian Stephen Hobbs on behalf of the Hartland Peninsula Association, adapted for audio. This is one of a series of four heritage walks that uncover some of the fascinating history across the Hartland Peninsula. This is Walk 1, the Hartenborough Walk, a circular walk of approximately 1 mile, exploring how the borough town of Harton, now Harton Village, came to be. It is a level, flat walk on good surfaces, suitable for pushchairs and wheelchairs. And as you'll be walking around the village, there are shops, cafes and pubs for refreshments, and interesting galleries and potteries to visit. There are toilets, including disabled toilets, by the main car park where the walk begins. You may find it useful to download the text version of this walk, available along with all the other walks and information on places to stay, eat, visit and explore from www.heartlandpeninsula.co.uk. Please use this audio responsibly. Take care to stand off roads and away from traffic when listening to the commentary. You are responsible for safely using this audio material. The walk starts from the main car park off Hartland Square in Hartland Village. You may want to look at the map on the wall to help you get your bearings. Before we set off, let me give you some background on Hartenborough. There has been a habitation at Hartland for a considerable time. It is mentioned in the wills of Saxon royalty, in the Domesday Survey, and was a named location for an extensive hundred administration area. The transition from rural habitation into a formal borough town came with a desire for status by the Dinham family, who gained the lordship of Hartland by the 12th century. The Dinhams were a prominent Norman family, originally recognised as holding English property on the ex-estuary at Nutwell, and they rose over four centuries to hold office at the highest national level. The Dinhams, having gained the lordship of Hartland, set about an ambitious scheme of enhancement in the medieval style and included all the requisites of a high-status estate: deer parks, the borough town, markets, hunting and religious establishments. As the family rose in status, they relocated to South Devon, first Kingswell, then returning to Nutwell, and the major part of the parish at Hartland became effectively a Barton farm for the Dinham family. The Dinhams died out in the male line in the 16th century, and the estate was then divided. This also corresponded with changes brought about by the dissolution of monasteries, and within a period of 50 years, the style of land ownership and governance for the parish dramatically changed. Let's set off. Until the creation of the car park, this was a walled garden belonging to the vicarage, now Charter House, sited on the left of the car park entrance. The established vicarage was sold into private hands and a new vicarage erected in the grounds. Take the footpath exit at the east end of the car park, through the wide arch into the sheltered housing complex. This complex was built in stages over the last 40 years. As you emerge on the footpath from the car park, just on your right, past the grassy garden area, where a small footpath runs off down into Well Lane, is the site of a set of four almshouses provided in the 17th century for the use of poor widows. This almshouse site was in exchange for property on what became the site of the parish poorhouse, sited approximately 1 mile west of Harton. The almshouses were considered for improvement in the 1960s, but due to cost, it was decided demolition and a new build was the economic method. Continue straight ahead east through the housing complex, into Pines Close, and take the footpath on the right-hand side to the road. Restart the audio when you reach the road. If you look to your left, north, you'll see the present Hartland Primary School. This can be seen from its architectural style to be based on a typical Devon national school type, which originally would have been an all-age school. In the 1960s, this was reduced to a primary school, with all over 11s being bused to Biddeford or Bude for their secondary education. Look straight ahead east over the housing development. This estate was built over a sizeable area of medieval strip fields, the closest ones to the borough town. Sadly, no recording or investigation was done into the field systems before their destruction, although the reconstruction of their layout can be seen from the Tithe map of 1864. This system of strip fields continued as far as Rosedown, approximately 1 mile east, and south along South Lane, with each property along the main street also having a back strip. The standard width at Hartland of a burgage strip was 16 feet 4 inches. Now, turn right, then right again, south, at the signpost, and continue on until the main street. Restart the audio there. You are now on 4th Street. Walk left, east, up the street to see a number of interesting sights. Shortly on your left, the building is that of a previous nonconformist chapel, which contained the chapel, a schoolroom, and on the left, a caretaker's cottage. Slightly further along is a property called Pentreath, a private house, which was the site of the earliest established nonconformist chapel in Harton. Further, and on your right, is the present United Methodist Chapel, which drew together a number of the strands of nonconformity and was built by Messrs. S. Kahn on the site of a licensed nonconformist burial ground. Previously, all burials were at St. Nectan's Church in Stoke. Returning the way you came, and on the left beyond the Methodist Church, you pass a group of houses known as Gregory Terrace, one of the first social housing developments in Hartland, and named after a very well-respected vicar of Hartland, the Reverend Prebendary Ivan Gregory, who wrote much on local history and is known for his publication of the Hartland Church Accounts, 1597 to 1706. The large building at the end of Gregory Terrace is Beech House, once a grocery shop with a bakery, and the adjacent building was an early motor car repair garage and petrol vendor. Walk on towards the main street, 4th Street. On your left, the grassed area at the T-junction is the site of the Hartland Gate, which was a toll house on the road from Hartland Quay to Twinaways, that the local squire, Colonel Orchard, had promoted. First local mention of this gate is within the farm accounts of John Vine of Patard Farm, who includes an amount allowed his driver, Colwell, to pay for an annual pass for the Harton Gate for a cart and livestock, and this is dated 1760. The last building on this site was demolished as part of a road widening programme. Go south down the hill to where the road crosses the water. This is the site of a bridge over a tributary of the Abbey River. This is the first bridge mentioned within written records of Hartland Borough in the 17th century, with a cost of repair and fines for those who failed to contribute their labour. When you reach the bridge, look to the right, west of the bridge structure, where you can see the stone remains of a wartime barrage gate, intended to allow water to be collected for firefighting purposes. A second such gate exists at Patard Water on the north of Harton. When you have finished looking at the bridge, go back up to 4th Street and restart the audio there. The range of buildings from the Anchor Inn West until Well Lane, which is on the right as you look down the street and marked by the granite wall sign to the Catholic Church, are a mixture of commercial and residential properties and have been in constant flux over the years. There are fewer commercial premises today than even 40 years ago. As you walk along the street, let's explore some. Worth mention is the area immediately opposite the T-junction. The low two-storey cottage was the site of a blacksmith forge for many years, last held by Henry Conybeare, whose children relocated to a larger premises at Ford Farm, before closing to become mobile farriers. On the left, west of the old forge, is a large house now known as Troy. This property is on the site of Troy Farm, which was in the possession of the church, and was one of a small number of church properties which were the subject of dispute following the Reformation. It was felt that the church had contrived to hide its assets from the commissioners. But in fact, the properties were out on long tenancies, and the church didn't regain them until long after the Reformation commissioners had left. The farm was divided, and a series of cottages was built for use by the poor. Notes in the church accounts and those of the Poor Law Commissioners recount how work was provided for the poor persons housed in these cottages by way of wool combing rather than being admitted into the poorhouse. The cottages burnt down when the thatch caught fire. The right-hand, easternmost cottage was never rebuilt, and its location is now a small garden area. Points to note on Four Street. The area from Well Lane east is considered to be at the outer edge of the earlier settlement of Harton, although documents are sparse to show which and how many properties existed. Certainly, the farms of Troy and one opposite Gregory Terrace are well recorded, but the period until the 17th century is fairly silent. It is known from the borough accounts that the main street had its pavements and roads remade in cobbles from the mid-17th century, and one could consider that the high pavement, known as the Quay, was built to take in what must have been an inclined verge during this period. Further along, on the left, within the complex of buildings that form Hurd's Garage, are the remains of a further nonconformist chapel. A number of cottages and shops were demolished when what was a carrier's business changed to a motor garage business and expanded. And in 2011, this area is about to be further redeveloped. The style of building on the south side of the street could be considered as earlier in character than that on the north, and house deeds seem to support this. From Well Lane westward, the building style is indicative of an early period of layout and often conforms to the previously mentioned 16-foot-4-inch Burgess plot. Walk along to and up Well Lane on the right, marked by a sign for the Catholic Church. This is the site of one of the two main water sources for the town. The well existed on the east side, the right-hand side as you walk up, close to the then entrance to the almshouses previously mentioned. The importance of these water sources is well recorded in the borough accounts, with considerable sums being spent on their repair and improvements. The last well was removed by the district council, but the well wasn't sealed, and water continues to flow down the lane to this day. The Catholic Church in Well Lane was established by a dedicated band of followers who had previously met in private houses and then the Women's Institute Hall with a visiting missionary priest taking services. They collected sufficient money from various enterprises to allow the purchase of a prefabricated wooden structure, which, with care, has served their congregation for nearly 50 years, but has now been closed by the Bishop of Plymouth. Opposite the entrance to the Catholic Church are the remains of a block of agricultural buildings now converted to holiday use. These were at one time the slaughterhouse serving the butcher's shop facing Fore Street. Go back to Fore Street and walk westwards to your right. Again, the mix of commercial and residential properties has frequently interchanged over the years. Of mention is the site now known as the Handy Store. The thatched building originally on this site protruded into the street and was the town library, maintained by the borough and later the Harton Town Trust. It was demolished to widen the road and the present building erected. Opposite the library site was the premises of Burrow & Co. Note the sign embedded into the porch canopy. This was the location of a general store run by the Burrows family and the printing works for Thomas Corey Burrow, who established the Heartland and West Country Chronicle, becoming known worldwide for his one-man newspaper. The Chronicle ran from the late 19th century until 1946, and Corey produced in excess of 400 issues, which have become a valuable source of information on the locality in those times. The large double-fronted house immediately left of Corey's Press existed as both a temperance hotel and a steam bakery run by the Fitzgerald family. Opposite this, and next door to the handy store, is now a grocery shop called the Pop Inn, for many years run by the Westlake family. They were well known for being in at the early stages of electric appliances, wireless sets, accumulator charging, as well as shoes, bicycles, petrol, and the numerous essentials of life. The shop became known for the proprietor, Miss Ruby Westlake, who, being short of stature, could only just peer over the top of her counter. The small lane at the side of the Pop Inn is called Calf Street, and allegedly was used to tie up young calves on market days for auction. A small building at the end of this lane housed Mrs. Bailey's fish and chip shop, called the Jamaica Cafe, named after the warship on which her son served. This was later taken over by Mr. Henry Mitchell, postmaster, who established a printing business there, taking forward the name to become Jamaica Press. They, in turn, have recently relocated to larger industrial premises away from Heartland. Continue walking until you reach the War Memorial in Harton Square and restart the audio there. Here we enter the heart of the town. In its present format, this square held the local market, housed the town hall and shambles, and became the focal point of village life. In the present square, the prominent building is now St. John's Arts and Music Centre. It was a chapel of ease for St. Nectan's Church at Stoke and built in the mid-19th century on the site of the last town hall. St. John's houses one of the oldest working civic clocks in the country, it having been built and installed during the 17th century. The original town hall used to hold all borough functions. It contained a number of rooms and off-chambers, and below the hall a small number, thought to be six, of areas for use by butchers, fish sellers, etc., in a shambles. Within the building was the tombstone, upon which deals were agreed and sealed. An earlier town hall was located on the site of the adjacent house, on the north side, and an even earlier hall, adjacent to what is now the public toilets. Little is known of these earlier structures, but mention is made within documents of their existence. Opposite St. John's, on the east side, at what is now a private dwelling, is the site of a second church farm, which became known as Cole Farm, but earlier was Cool House. It is possible that this was the location for the storage of the cool or ducking stall, or later the tumbrel cart, both devices for punishment. The borough was continually fined for their lack of upkeep of these devices. Walk behind St. John's on the west side to see a row of cottages in Chapel Street. These belong to Harton Town Trust and are some of the oldest cottages with a documented history. In the small paved area at the north end of the cottages were found the remains of the bull pit. The stake and chain were uncovered during the laying of drains, but unfortunately never photographed or recorded. But the process of bull baiting is well recorded at Heartland. Walk back towards the lower side of the square. This part is the site of an earlier chapel dedicated to St. Andrew, a pub called the Black Horse, and a mysterious building known as the Great Kitchen, thought to be where the present King's Arms is. If you walk along to your right, west, the oblong of houses on your right, which make up the Town Trust cottages, the public toilets, and new houses built on the old Huggins Brothers motor repair garage, have previously revealed a sequence of house foundations and small streets. Continue walking west and into Springfield and restart the audio there. You are entering what may well have been the original centre of the habitation of Harton. The oblong of houses between Springfield and West Street was an open grassed area until the late 19th century. The grass area and the evidence of cottages on all sides falls within the classic description of early settlements. Springfield was one of the areas used for the markets and fairs, it having pens erected for the sale of cattle, sheep, pigs and so on. A small cobbled street off Springfield to your left is known as Threadneedle Street, reputedly due to the presence of ladies who were engaged in dressmaking or more likely weaving, living in these houses. Springfield was the home to an early school, the building being made into the Women's Institute Hall when the county school opened. The WI have recently sold this hall due to ever-rising costs, and it's now in private hands. The western end of Springfield was agricultural in use, but is now an access gate into the Vale and two fine houses. An 18th century document in the possession of Harton Town Trust is an agreement between Paul Orchard of Hartland Abbey and the borough, whereby he leases for 3,000 years a farm, cottages and the bowling green, which may have been the grassed area. This enabled him to demolish the farm to allow his new carriage drive to emerge from the woodland valley into the centre of the town, where the access gate is now. The carriage drive is the subject of a further walk in this series, Walk 2, the Parkland Walk. Walk up the once cobbled street, Colwell Street, at the west end of Springfield, which crosses into West Street. It passes Springfield Pottery, run by Philip Leach, grandson of the famous Bernard Leach, who established the influential Studio Pottery in St Ives. The Colwell family for whom this street is named were traders in the town, having businesses at Colwell Street, North Road and within Fairfield House, that later became Huggins Brothers Garage. Fairfield House was previously the home of the Cann family, who ran a haberdashery business from the premises. After the death of Mr. and Mrs. Cann, Sr., the family moved north to Bristol and later Liverpool, taking their entire stock with them. One of the sons was an established photographer, and fortunately a large collection of his work remains. The small open area at the end of Colwell Street once was the site of the Limehouse and a weighscale for use with the markets. Houses on the north of West Street would have faced onto the grassed area and had burgess plots at their rear. When you reach West Street, turn left west. Walk a short distance where you'll see a little road running left of West Street, a small cul-de-sac known as Wesley Terrace. If you walk down here, you'll see the three cottages on the south of this street were the result of the conversion of the earlier Wesleyan chapel once on this site. The land was donated to the Nonconformist by a member of the Prust family who, although a strong church person, believed in religious freedom and supported the Wesleyans in their desire to have a prayer house. Go right to the end of this cul-de-sac and face west. You are now looking out over the site of an earlier medieval deer park established by the Dinham family. A second park was created slightly later by the family and abuts this park on its northern edge and stretches across the valley north. The mystery at Hartland is the location of a house of substance in which the lords of the manor, the Dinhams, would have lived. Some favour a property, the lodge, thought to have been located in the woodland through which Paul Orchard's carriage drive passed. Others favour such as the hamlet of Cheristow or even Blegbury. However, documents have recently shown that the lodge was a park keeper's lodge, but that a property known as the Great House did exist and, from locative research, appears to have been in the area of Wesley Terrace. This would have been appropriate, as it would have given the Dinhams views over their high status estate and yet place them at the centre of their borough town. However, further research is needed on this before we can confidently state that this was the location of the Dinhams' residence. Retrace your steps, then walk to the end of West Street and take the path to the right of the last house onto the tennis courts and playing fields. Restart the audio there. The playing fields were, more recently, the site of the modern cattle market. There were sheep pens at the west end, which have been replaced by the tennis courts, then a sail ring and a weighbridge, and lastly, cattle pens under the site of the play area and the pavilion building. There was also a shed and compounds for pigs against the eastern boundary. The pavilion building was erected as a community hall during the 1960s and originated as an officers' building from the defunct American military base at Morwenstow, now the CSOS site. It was taken apart on a very misty day, transported back to Hartland on trailers and re-erected on this site, all by volunteers. Pass the pavilions and leave the playing fields. Turn right south into North Street and restart the audio there. The area now covered by the British Legion car park was the site of the town pound, a small enclosed area into which unattended stray animals were placed until collection by their owners on payment of a fine. From the pound, looking south straight ahead, early photographs show a range of dwellings and workshops. At one time, the traders' coal wells operated from some of these premises. The dwellings, and those sited in Natcot Lane, were described as some of the most appalling ever visited by the health inspector. He quoted families living in overcrowded rooms and sleeping with views of the night sky. Walk west along the street and turn left east at the top of North Street. The range of buildings on your left is known as the Manor House. This has been the home of the Prust family for many generations, and they held numerous positions of authority within the area. How and when it became titled the Manor House is unknown. There is no documentary evidence to suggest this to be the case, and it may be that it assumed the name more recently as a matter of status. However, from these premises, the Prust family ran a tannery business, the only one recorded in the area. It was an oak bark tannery, and until the recent conversion of the outbuildings, the tannery facilities were easily visible. Today, you can see a large granite wheel resting against the end of the present workshop. Many think this to be from a corn mill, but if you look closely, you will see there are no indentations on the flat surfaces, but that the wheel edge is serrated. This wheel would have run upright in a circular trough and been driven by a horse. Into the trough would be placed the bark from oak trees, and the wheel would crush the bark to release the tannin. The skins to be treated would pass through a series of troughs containing ingredients such as lime, urine, or dog excrement, before being hung to dry in a room with slatted openings which allowed air to pass through but not sunlight. The purchase of bark from local farms and the sale of leather by the Prust tannery, and a side product, the sale of hair by the bushel for use in the building trades, is well documented within local records, as is the behaviour of the tanner, who was regularly held responsible for the maintenance of illegitimate children in the town. Continue east past the front of the manor and you will now have returned to the vicinity of the car park. This is the end of Walk 1, the Harton Borough Walk. We hope you enjoyed it. There are three more walks in the Heritage series that can be downloaded from our site, and also, for families, the wonderful Hartland Treasure Trail from the award-winning Treasure Trails Company. Plus, there are six beautiful walks to download in print format to help you explore our beautiful coast and countryside. All are available from www.heartlandpeninsula.co.uk. Thank you for listening.